It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, he need cut a dude, man.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Kodagi, to all my friends and relatives. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, my colonized name, Wendy, is Robert Pilot, and
yeah, that's your taxpayer name.
Hey, stealing my thunder. And, you know, we discuss national and Twin City Native American news and events, and as we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. And then, Wendy, a lot going on here.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. Call them at 651-304-9986, Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with your COVID-19 questions.
Wow, Pini Gigi, well read. Or no, you knew that by heart. So busy day in the news, even though it's Fun Friday.
I know. I call it Fluff Friday, but there is a lot of news out there that's not fluff.
So why don't we get right away to Ogama with the news. Welcome, Ogama.
Hey, Anim Buju, Robert and Wendy. I'm going to start off today with kind of what the big thing is in the news as far as the front lines of Stop Line 3, because I don't feel that we really have the ability to glance over this topic. So today, this afternoon, a public safety alert went out at about 2 p.m. To cell phones across Carlton County, advising people to avoid the area near Cary and Enger Roads to Mission Road on the north side of Big Lake on the Fond du Lac Reservation. The reason that they sent this alert out was because they believe that there was reason to suspect that there had been a bomb or some other explosive device. They did request a bomb squad through the Minnesota duty officer to come investigate these supposed suspicious packages. And I guess the initial public safety alert was sent to Aiken, Pine, and St. Louis counties as well. But then they later sent a subsequent alert saying that the event is localized within Carlton County. So what happened is that Line 3 and Bridge Line 3 pipeline workers reported that there was three people that had thrown suspicious packages out and left the area. According to the press release, just before noon Friday, Fond du Lac police have responded to a protest activity blocking a ditch bank road. The title of the road or the name of the road is actually Ditch Bank, all one word. So supposedly Enbridge workers saw people throwing suspicious packages out and then abruptly left the area, which triggered this bomb threat. So the area was evacuated out of an abundance of caution. They used the Perch Lake Town Hall as a shelter for anybody who was evacuated. The Cloquet Area Fire District, the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources also responded to assist with the incident. It's listed here in the last article that I read that local law enforcement will send out a notification when it is safe to return to the area. You'll have to apologize. I'll have to apologize to you all if I'm not completely up to date with this up to the very minute. I'm sorry. This is an entirely developing story that I expect us to have more information on Monday. I don't know what happened. This is an issue that is, you know, something that we talk about a lot on Native Roots Radio. And, you know, I read as many articles as I could find about it today. And I have to say that, you know, the circumstances of this maybe just aren't sitting very right with me right now. So on Tuesday, Enbridge actually had a drop in their credit score. So Fitch Ratings, which is one of the like largest and most revered worldwide credit ratings, actually dropped Enbridge's credit score from an A to a B, and basically said that part of the reason for that is because The permitting risks for the pipeline construction in Canada and the U.S. remain elevated, which is directly from Fitch Ratings, and that reaching the construction stage has become more difficult for the industry, including Enbridge, in recent years. Fitch believes there are a variety of causes for the current situation. Basically, Enbridge did not budget enough money to complete this project safely. They did not budget enough money from previous news that I have read, and just last week they announced that their budget had increased by $1.1 billion because they did not properly account for the cost of COVID precautions for their workers and also for wetland protections, that laws that they needed to follow in Minnesota to protect our wetlands. Minnesota has a lot of wetland protection laws, and yet they were granted this permit without accounting for those things into their budget. And they have other projects and things that they are working on underneath and around other major sources of water, including the Great Lakes and as well as obviously the Mississippi River here with the Line 3 pipeline. So these are the kind of things that concern me, that this happened. This article came out from Fitch on Tuesday, and now there's a supposed bomb threat at a well-known water protector camp very near to the site where Enbridge construction is happening. Enbridge spokesperson Julie Kellner reported to WDIO News that the company's Line 3 replacement project workers saw protesters throw a, quote, suspicious device onto the construction site and then rush away. She said all workers were safely evacuated. She then quoted that putting the lives of workers and others at risk is unacceptable, and protesters need to know actions that put people in harm's way will be prosecuted, and that we are working with the police and other authorities to assure worker safety. Notice she did not say public safety. I did speak with some people in the area just before I came on the show, and they said that there were people that they know that were asked to evacuate that did not have transportation means to evacuate and therefore were left where they were. Enbridge did not provide any sort of transportation for those people. I'm not even sure how they know that they were notified. I don't know that they directly went and notified people. You know, you just get this alert on your cell phone and look at a map. I don't know how people are notified that they need to evacuate, but I also find it fishy that they're working with police and authorities to assure worker safety, but yet ordered this evacuation out of an abundance of caution from about 8 homes in the immediate area, and did not ensure that those public residents who needed to possibly be evacuated were taken care of. From the Duluth News Tribune, there was an interview done with a Danielle Martineau, who led a group of tribal members from Fond du Lac to confront the protesters at Camp McGizzy. They were very upset with Camp McGizzy and believe that this supposed bomb threat was somehow caused by Camp McGizzy, which at this point there's no news on whether or not this was actually a legitimate explosive device or anything like that so far that I found. But, you know, those protectors who are at the camp were confronted by other members of their community who also did the same thing that Enbridge did and did not, you know, offer assistance or help to anybody in the area that may have possibly needed to be evacuated. So I'm not sure that people are really waking up to the idea or to the fact, and I want to call it a fact, I want to be clear with that, that these types of tactics and this type of news coverage around issues like this are ways to separate the community. They are ways to divide us and to have us start bickering with one another over things that are not the real issue. And this is something that people in our media talk about a lot in America. So I guess I just want to end my piece here with a statement from Anton Treuer that he gave to Indian Country Today earlier this week. He said, Enbridge leaders know there's no way for them to win the hearts and minds of all Native people, but they don't have to. If they can win over just enough to clear the hurdles to get to the next easement or the next little contract or permit approved, they know they'll be able to get their work done. So keep that comment in mind when you know, you're talking about whether or not Enbridge has the best interests in mind for our Native communities.
Absolutely. And I think we need to stay on top of this and really talk about really what's going on up there. Great insight, great news. This is Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, Pinigigi Ogama. Up next, Senator Mary Kunish. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjare.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Well, I just want to, before we get to our guest, I just want to point out what Gary said on Facebook Live about this last thing was that this last post was, if no bomb was found, it almost sounds like a PR effort demonizing water protectors. Mm-hmm. And so stay tuned, right?
Yeah, stay tuned. You know, the water protectors are peaceful protesters. This would just
go against that.
So, yeah, sounds good, Gary. Good call.
Good call. Yeah, thanks for listening, too. And Wendy, what day is it?
Today is Friday.
And what do we usually do on Friday?
We talk to Mary Kunish.
All right. Hey, House... there we go. Dang it. Senator Mary Kunish, welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Oh, thank you, Robert and Wendy. It's really great to be back here with you on a Friday evening.
Yeah, it is. We can't hear you as well right now.
You sound low. Maybe you could just pull up your volume a little bit?
Sure.
Okay.
Is that better?
A little bit more.
Any better? Let me see what we got here.
Well,
I had a text come in while you were talking. I don't know if that made any difference.
Okay, let's just go. Maybe the studio could turn you up.
Yeah. Yeah. You sound great, though, too. Just a little soft.
Thank
that's
you.
All. Hey, so.
Turn me up, studio.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm having problems right here. Yeah.
There we go. How's that?
Good.
Yeah, better. Okay. So, what's been going on? I know we were just had this big piece about what's happening up in Fond du Lac with a possible bomb scare with the peaceful protesters, and I know you've been alerted to that, and it's a state issue, and, you know, like I said earlier, Gary might say if there's no bomb found, it might be a PR issue, and we're kind of connecting the dots here where Enbridge now is a Class B loaning money, and that's a big deal. That costs millions and billions of dollars, depending on how much money they're loaning or borrowing. And so there's a lot of moving parts here, and it still isn't finished. So what have you heard?
Well, I think I got probably those same alerts that you did, that there were two different locations and that a package had been thrown near some of the workers and there was a ticking sound coming out of it. I think that's all been pretty much dispelled. It really did put the community into a tizzy up there. I don't think that they had any plans for any sort of thing, mostly because similar to what Wendy was saying, these protesters are peaceful protesters. They're not looking to bomb anybody or hurt anybody or be, you know, violent in that way. And so those that have been communicating with me were very confused by it. And of course, there's all kinds of different scenarios and different, like, who would it be? Could it be this person? Could it be that group? And so, you know, we just, you know, I just kept saying, look, until we have the facts, nobody should be pointing any fingers at anybody. And until we know what that is, I mean, was it a bundle of sweet grass? Was it,
right.
You know, a prayer package, you know, whatever the case may be. Was it a bag of garbage? I don't know. And we don't know yet. So until we hear the facts and until we come up with some, you know, real truth to the matter, I would just say, please, let's not let's not aggravate the situation, not implode, and, you know, really get to the bottom of it. And it could be just a really simple mistake that on somebody's part. And when we find out, you know, I'm sure they're going to feel bad, but I just hope that there aren't retaliations or pointing fingers at each other. There's nothing worse than the destruction of a community. And those folks up there, you know, they protect each other. They listen to each other. They care for each other. But sometimes there's a situation where not everybody feels the same, like with line three. And by the time this is all over, they all have to live together. I can't imagine everybody leaving up there, but I just would hope that this doesn't escalate into something unnecessarily, and that the investigation is a real, honest, integral investigation. And again, it isn't one-sided or fingers are pointed at parties that really had no involvement at all.
Yeah, exactly. Say, you've had a really busy week and weekend last week, and all the work you do with MMIW. And then can you tell our audience a little bit about that experience? Because I've seen you all over Facebook and the radio, and you hosted a show. And talk to our audience a little bit about what you've been doing.
Right. Last year... No, not 20. In 2019, we passed a piece of legislation that created a task force to study the historic trauma of our missing and murdered Indigenous women here in Minnesota. And we kept it very lean so as not to cost a lot of money, even though we had over 25 members on the task force, all volunteers from, you know, across the state, commissioners, coroner, all of these different entities came together. And in, you know, just 18 months, we were able to put together, you know, probably the most comprehensive state report on the MMIW, or I'm going to start referring to it as MMIR, R being our relatives, because we know that this trauma, this missing, this murdered and injustice, you know, isn't just women, but it's girls and boys and men and our two-spirit LGBTQ community. And so in those 18 months, we were able to put it together. In spite of COVID, we had to cut short a lot of the in-person.
Yeah, some of the... Mary just froze, but, you know, they had to do a lot of the stuff online, and it's really, really exciting. Are you back? Yeah, you're moving again, Mary. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just shifted a little bit here. And so yeah, we put that report out in December, thanks to Wilder Research and Nicole Martin Rogers and a number of other people, Nigel Perot and Kate Weeks at the state government. Nicole Matthews was our co-chair with me. So we were able to put this report together in December, and we've been trying to share it as best we can over the last couple of months so that folks can understand what we're all about and the history behind it. Unfortunately, there's still tons of people, so many people that don't understand how centuries of our generations of women and girls and others have, you know, just been brutally murdered, and there's been no social or judicial justice for their missing or their murders. And we want to bring an end to that. We want to be able to address it. And along with that is the sex trafficking market and other forms of violence. Interestingly enough, just today, Representative Ruth Richardson presented the MMI MMBW task force, so Missing and Murdered Black Women, and she modeled it after our task force, which is wonderful because then we're all looking at, you know, it might be apples and oranges, but we're still looking at the same process, and you know, we'll be able to share the same data. And I'm really excited because I'm carrying that in the Senate as well, so hopefully we'll get a hearing in the Senate and be able to pass this as well, because we know women of color, our communities of color, have the highest outcomes in violence against them, in prosecutions, in incarcerations, and all of these things are really tied up with the issues around poverty, mm-hmm. around prejudice, around the growing diversity in our state, but yet our communities of color are not given the same opportunities as our non-white folks. And so we've had a few forums. We had a great one with the MMI rally last weekend. We couldn't walk together, but we Zoomed together and mm-hmm. shared the information. Today I was on a forum with Your Call Minnesota, which is an awareness campaign around sex trafficking. And we will talk about that in a little bit more, I hope.
Yeah, definitely. Why don't we segue that back into there? Peeny Geegee, Mary, for being on, and we're going to come on at the next segment. And you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Stay with us.
Oh, when do you want to say?
We are a Lusa nation. We are a Lusa nation.
Governor Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. You can call them Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. at 651-304-9986 with your COVID-19 questions.
Hey, one of our listeners on Facebook said that they heard another rumor out there about what was thrown into that pipeline. And it says it was a box of donuts.
Well, we'll see after the investigation, right? There's going to be lots of rumors. Hopefully it is a box of donuts.
Yeah. You ever have a Hertz donut, Wendy?
Oh,
that's an old one.
That's an old one, Robert.
And she's smiling at me like she has had one before.
So. My brothers use that all the time. They love that one.
Yeah. Hey, so welcome back, Senator Mary Kunesh, and welcome back. And we were cut right into the middle of the story there. Maybe you can pick up from where you left off.
Sure. I was telling you about a campaign against sex trafficking, and it's called yourcallmn.org. So it's yourcallmn.org. They've got a website, and there are videos on there. There's all kinds of information that they put out around sex trafficking. Today, I was on the forum with Sheila
Lamb
from up in Cloquet, and she's one of our task force members. We were on that one together, and there's a trailer and there's a video that she and Chris Stark, another woman who works really hard against violence against women and sex trafficking. But if you go onto this website, you'll find phone numbers. If you suspect anyone of being sex trafficked or that there's sex trafficking going on in your community or somewhere somewhere that you just have a sense, you can call a number. It's 877-966-6222. And just tell them what you think, what you know. It's better to report it than not to report it. Don't feel foolish if you think, oh, it's nothing. I'm probably exaggerating or imagining. If you have a sense that something's not right, please call that number. And it's 877-966-6222. Or you can text HELP, the word HELP, to 233-733. But that information is right on the website for yourcallmn.org. And so they're working with us as well to be able to identify all this action that's going on that's so disruptive in our communities.
Yeah, Mary, I don't know if you've jumped into the TikTok world yet, but there is one thing is there's major, major information about Native Americans that I find very, very interesting. But also there's a group that I follow that basically engages pedophiles over the phone and texting and sets them up. And then they just blast them out and take pictures of them where they're showing up. You're going, hey, you know, that wasn't a 15-year-old girl. That was me, you know.
Yeah.
And so I guess my point is it's still rampant.
And it is absolutely. Rampant. It is still absolutely rampant. I get phone calls all the time. People that have concerns and have a really sense of gloom and doom. And so, as I say, you know, if you're feeling that sense, then please call in. And it's interesting because one of the things that we realized and other studies have found is that it's not the Native men who are the perpetrators against the Native women. It is non-Native women or non-Native men who groom young women for sex trafficking, who find vulnerable women and are abusive to them. And one of the studies that I heard when we were doing this, the legislation for the for the task force, somebody just, you know, came out and said, like, well, who are they? Who are these Johns, these perpetrators who are buying sex? And it came down to a white man in their 30s, disposable income, fathers, and generally have a bit of time on their hands. And that's a really, I mean, that's a horrific profile. There are a lot of men out there that fit that profile. But those are the men that are out there buying sex and taking advantage of women.
So one of the things, too, with the kind of the changing of the name with relatives and also our Black brothers and sisters that are being added with their own group, I think about in a selfish way, because I was adopted, that I was missing, too, for many years.
Yeah.
And so there's different facets of the murdered and missing Indigenous people, relatives.
Absolutely. And, you know, so many of our children were removed from their families for minimal reasons that no white kid would be taken away from them or no other group of people would be removed from the families and quickly put into foster care and often moved to different states. Canada often sent their kids from foster care into the adoption world here in the United States. Those are missing relatives. It's interesting, you know, with these new DNA tests that have come out, we actually did find a relative that was adopted. And wow. He now lives in Japan, of all places. He teaches over there, married to a Japanese woman. They just had triplets. But he had gone back to Standing Rock, and because he knew just little bits of pieces of his heritage, and posted something on their Facebook page, or I don't know if it was a blog or guest book or something. My brother found it, my brother who's big into genealogy, and they passed back and forth information, and my brother sent him a DNA kit that actually actually verified that, yes, we were related. So this happens all over the place, all over the world. And I always want to make sure to recognize, too, it's not just our Native folks, but a lot of kids of color have this same story. And it's so heartbreaking.
Yeah, you were mentioning, you turned us on to, I went to Wounded Knee, I think it was last year, I went with Clyde Belcourt, and I listened to that one podcast that you turned
Finding
me on.
Finding Chloe.
Thank you. And didn't know how severe the 60s scoop was in Canada, but oh my God, that story was intense, but it was not, you know, a unique story, Mary.
No, it's actually Finding Cleo. And yes, it's a CBC podcast, so it's coming out of Canada. And it's just a really sad story about how these children were just literally scooped away from their mother. And she herself was a victim of so much violence in her life, but she worked hard to keep her kids together. And they were all removed. She was, if you remember, they came in and took the children and they handcuffed her to the door so that she couldn't go after her children.
Right.
And her children didn't know that. And there were some of them that were like, why didn't you fight for us? Why didn't you come after us?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they handcuffed her to the door, took the kids away, dispersed them all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Cleo ended up, and her brother ended up in the United States.
Right.
And this was the search of her siblings for her. It's really worth listening to.
It is. And one of the things, too, how the trauma spread around the whole family, because like I think there was four or five siblings that were taken away. And
yeah.
The oldest son said that he'd come back for Cleo, and he never got over it.
No.
And really, he's been damaged his whole life because of that.
Yeah.
Never being able to find her. And it's intense.
And you know, you think about, again, our DNA and genetics. And I've read a lot about epigenetics and how those kind of traumas, you know, permanently distort or affect our DNA that we pass down to our kids. And, you know, we need to break these generational issues so that we have healthy families, families that can stay together. You know, when families are destroyed like that, it's hard to have a family of the future because you're afraid they're going to be taken away. We hear so many stories about how Native families would hide their children or build tunnels under their houses for the kids to escape when anybody pulled in. And, you know, you lose that familial, like how to care for a child, how to be loving. And so, you know, emotionally, so many families weren't able to connect like other families because they were always afraid of being torn apart, and the pain of that was too much.
Yeah, that was the generation of boarding schools and the 60s scoop and all these things to really get rid of Native Americans across the country. I had an opportunity to talk to an old friend's son, and he was doing a paper at the University of Minnesota, a speech about Native Americans, and just telling him how Hitler copied the United States on reservations and camps and the struggles that we have right now. I think, again, people don't know that we're still here.
Right. It's terrible to know that Hitler copied the United States genocide of the American Indian people in his efforts to in genocide against the Jews. It was just classic. The ghettos that they talked about, pushing all the Jews into ghettos and then putting them on trains. And that was classic Native American. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and Minnesota had, I think it was 16 boarding schools here in Minnesota. The University of Minnesota Morris was an Indian boarding school. Their schools are still there. And it's just so sad.
Yeah, that is. Well, you know, on that note, I hope we all have a good weekend. No, but yeah, that is our history, and I'm glad that we can talk a little bit about that, along with your work and the work for the community. It's a hard one, Mary. Pini Gigi, for being on and all you do for the state of Minnesota and especially Native Americans.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Hey, wow. What a great interview as always. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Up next, Wendy with our sacred animal section. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
We are Alusa Nation.
This is Winona the Duke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake.
We are Alusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanjahare.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl!
We always do the howl.
Wow. Emma missed it.
That's okay.
Yeah, my bad. Ogama missed it.
Yes, Ogama missed it. Hey, I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy.
Says it right there.
Where does it? I'm looking all over. Where
says it right
say?
There.
Hey, we need to resist.
I've been an animal advocate for many, many years, and I'm a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. And my name is Hanaji Hihani, and that means cares for them. And I was given that name by Dega Curtis. So as always, thank you, Curtis.
Do I haul now? Oh, wait, we already did that.
Robert, you're behind the times. But anyway, today's Friday, and today is Fluff Piece Friday.
Yay.
Or Friday's Fluff Piece, I should
say.
Say
that three times really
I know,
fast.
It's really hard to say. But I have, I get updates from the Autobahn magazine. I get an Autobahn magazine and updates from them all the time.
Is that like cars?
You know what? It's funny that you say that, because years ago, that's what I thought it was. It's like, I didn't know how Autobahn and
automobiles.
Yeah, Autobahn. But it's the birds. They talk about birds.
Oh.
But anyway, they had this really neat article. It's called Till Death Do Them Part. And this is 8 birds that mate for life. And I was surprised at some of them that mate for life. One of the first one on the list is the black vulture.
Oh.
Yeah, they mate for life. They have about 2 eggs. And here's a cool fact. This vulture species doesn't build a nest. Rather, they just lay the eggs on the ground or in a hollow cavity somewhere. Yeah. So that was interesting. I didn't know. I wouldn't think that a black vulture would mate for life. Bald eagles, right? We've talked about that before, Robert. Bald eagles mating for life. They generally have about 1 to 3 eggs. And a cool fact about bald eagles is that measuring 6 feet across and 4 feet tall or even larger, bald eagles' nests are some of the largest of any avian species.
Remember that one we saw?
We saw one.
It was big as a Volkswagen.
It was. It literally. We could have. You could have laid in it. Really. I mean,
there
that's
was
how
other
big it
nests
was.
In it.
I know. It was. It was the biggest nest I've ever seen in my life, and I remember looking up, because when you take a picture of it, and you look at it, you really can't tell. You know, the size difference.
Nothing, right.
Nothing but when you're there in person, I was just. Really, very, very surprised.
And what's interesting too is we had an opportunity to see the babies over the years going up there and and visiting the family that it's in their backyard basically.
Yeah.
And there's one in the backyard of a group right off River Boulevard here in St. Paul too that we go visit. But the babies are black until they're 5 years old.
I know. Isn't that amazing? It is. I really liked what that family did up north though. They put like a barrier of some type of like metal or something around the tree.
Tin
around the tree, right? So that other animals couldn't climb the tree to eat the eggs. So that was really cool.
They were real protectors of the of those egos and loved them. And they had many families that gone through there, and they lost their cat once too.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Then they had another cat that was a strictly indoor cat, because the eagles will, you know.
They do what they do. We saw one walking down Cleveland Avenue a few blocks from her house, and we're going, why is that eagle flying so low? And we found out, like, in 2 seconds later, he was coming in the other direction with the squirrel and his.
Came back, grabbed the squirrel. I saw it with my own eyes, picked the squirrel up, and ran and flew away with the squirrel.
He couldn't run. He had the squirrel in his hand.
Oh, that was really sad. Okay, so that's it's supposed to be Fluff Peace Friday.
Oh,
okay, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but it's Lassan albatross. These are birds also that mate for life. They have one egg. Cool fact, nearly three-quarters of the world's population of these species nest on Midway Alton National Wildlife Refuge. And they don't breed until they're around 8 or 9 years old, and they're monogamous, annually solidifying their bond through a ritual dancing. So that's something good. So they kind of like renew their bird vows every year.
It reminds me of the days of disco when I would disco.
Mm-hmm. If they do lose their mate, they will go through a year or two of a mourning period, says John Clavita, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biologist at the Midway Atoll. After that, they will do a courtship dance to try to find another mate. But look at that. They go through a mourning period for 1 or 2 years.
I believe it. Yeah. I really do.
So here's another one. The mute swan. Those are the swans with the big, you know, the white swans with the big long necks.
Mm-hmm.
They have about 5 to 7 eggs each. And during mating, the black knob on the base of the male's bill swells up these extremely territorial birds originally introduced from Europe. So they are the pair that mates for life. The mute swan pairs reportedly stay together for life. However, divorce does occur in less than 3% of mates that breed successfully and 9% that don't. So they divorce.
So they need a lawyer.
Hey, if they don't get along, they get a divorce.
Well,
I think that's pretty
cool. As our listening audience knows, I'm your best husband so far.
So far, so good.
That's right.
The scarlet macaw, those are those beautiful, colorful birds. They have 2 to 4 eggs. Cool fact, these birds can live to be 75 years old in captivity, or on average 33 in the wild. Typically, these rainbow-colored birds spend their lives together. They even preen each other and their young, picking bugs from their feathers. Scarlet macaw parents, which reach sexuality maturity sometimes between the age of 3 to 4, won't raise new chicks until their previous ones have been left the house.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, wow, what a thankful, thoughtful day of animal updates.
Yeah.
Say, I wonder if you mind, we're going to jump to Ogama real quick with because of this news.
Sure.
She's got a couple more updates here in the last minute of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Ogama. Welcome back.
Hey, yeah. So a couple of updates on that supposed explosive device found near pipeline. The WDIO article has been updated to say device found near pipeline, not explosive. Mm-hmm. They called it a device, but it says a device that caused an hours-long evacuation part of the Fond du Lac Reserve on Friday was not explosive. The other update is that about 40 homes were evacuated around 12:40, and that everybody was told that they could go back to their homes shortly after about 5 p.m.
All right, good news.
So I don't know if it doesn't really give any more information whether or not it was an attempted explosive device or not. Yeah, it definitely was not whatever it was not explosive.
It might have been donuts.
I don't know.
You ever have a Hertz?
Oh, Yeah. Oh, and just one more update, too. I don't know if you guys caught that from my initial kind of report of this, is that Fond du Lac members are currently blocking those who are not members of Fond du Lac Reservation from entering the camp at Camp McGizzy as of right now. I don't know.
Yeah, but she owns that land, and it's not on reservation land, so I don't understand that whole thing either. But we'll have to figure
Yeah, I'm not sure of the lines or anything with that. That'll kind of be more ongoing as well. So,
well, Pinigigi, for your updates in the news all around Turtle Island, Ogama. And Wendy, always Pinigigi for what you do for our native sacred animals. Mm-hmm. Hey, I would like to end with these thoughts. If you're listening to this show, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Plentycoops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, and run for office. I would like to thank our listening audience and Senator Mary Kunish for being on. If you're listening to this show, you are the resistance. We are still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier.